Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. Joining us today is the dynamic and hilarious Moo Cuzzo, a stand-up comedian, producer, and community leader. With a journey that began in hip-hop, Moo transitioned into comedy around 2017. Since then, he's been making waves in the regional comedy scene, curating multiple events like the Positive Vibes Only Festival, hosting open mic nights at venues such as Soul Rebel in Petersburg, Virginia, and the upcoming Time Travel Trivia Night he's doing with his wife, Paula G., a poet. Known for his authentic storytelling and commitment to uplifting others, Moo is set to headline at Massanutten Resort's new comedy club on May 24th. Welcome to the show, Moo. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for that wonderful intro.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you on the show. You've done shows for us in the past here in the Shenandoah Valley, but this will be your first appearance at the new comedy club, and I can't wait for this. How about you?
Yeah, well, we don't have no choice. We got to wait. That's what my mom used to tell me. If I can't wait, you ain't got no choice. But it'll be here before we know it, May 24th, and I am definitely excited about it.
Yeah, you're bringing some people. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but we're going to get your background first. And before we do that, laughers, I wanted to say to you that we have some exciting news. You can grab a free audiobook from Audible just by hitting the link in the show notes. You can grab that so you can listen to somebody else besides me between episodes. And when you do that and you decide to sign up for Audible, actually get a little kickback that'll help this podcast grow, which we're really thankful for because we can't do anything we do without you and your support. So let's get into this interview today so you can meet today's wonderful guest. He has quite the extraordinary background coming from hip hop into stand-up comedy. And that is where I want to start. How does one transition from hip hop into stand-up comedy, Moo Cuzzo?
Well, it's simple, Don. I was trying to be a rapper and I turned 40. And when you are trying to be a rapper and turn 40, you're automatically a stand-up comedian. So that's how that happened. I figured I'd rather have them laugh with me than at me. So I just started telling jokes instead of rhymes.
Is that really a thing, though? Do you age out of hip-hop? Is that based on truth?
No, honestly, you don't age out of hip-hop, but okay, you do age out of the business.
What does that mean?
Some of the best lyrics will come from people with experience, but some of the best marketing plans are for young generations. The people who control music industry, they're not really looking at the sustainability of hip hop. They're looking at the next dollar they can make. And so it's a young man's game. So they want what's new, what's fresh, what's hip. And so it's hard. And then also when you talk about just as a business standpoint, investing in somebody, you're spending money and you want, in the music industry, you want a lot of money in return. And if you look at somebody that's older, you're like, how much longer are they going to be kind of hot? So it's kind of hard for executives to get behind a older rapper, if you will. It's not like comedy where you can be funny until you die. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. With rap, you do have kind of a lifeline on how cool you are, pretty much. You know, the older you get, the just less cool it looks.
When did you do the comedy then? Was this during a hip hop performance? When was your first stand up, quote unquote, performance, would you say?
It's funny. So it was at Wabi Sabi. It was actually maybe a year or two before I actually took comedy serious. It was an open mic I used to do, and I used to just rap, and they had the band that would play behind me, and I told the band, look, I'm gonna do a couple jokes, and they're like, okay. And so they all left, they just got up and left, and I'm like, where y'all going? Because I did my couple jokes and that was it, and the audience just looking at me like, now what? And I didn't have a band behind me. I'm like, so I was just nervously just kind of riffing. It was terrible. But that was my first attempt. Oh, it was definitely terrible. It was so cringy. And you probably would laugh at the situation, not necessarily the material. I do have it recorded. It's hilarious.
Do you really?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. But then the band eventually came back on stage, and I just started freestyling, and then I, you know, just ended it with some music, because that's how I kind of masked the insecurity of the bomb that just happened.
Do you ever go back and watch that now that you've been doing comedy 8 years? No, that was enough.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's enough.
How did your comedy evolve after that? What was your next comedy performance? Did you go through open mics?
A couple of years after that, and then I was talking to a cousin who said we need to come up with a business where we are where we don't have to spend a lot on the raw goods. We want to work for ourselves, but we don't have any resources. Mm-hmm. And so he said, you know, our brain is a resource. We can write jokes.
Yeah.
And that's the raw goods and material that we can refine and we can sell tickets. And I was like, genius. He's like, you already do rap, but, you know, we can transition. And Daryl Jones, I give 100% credit because he's the one that told me we should do this. In fact, he was the one that was supposed to be the comedian. Like what I'm doing now, it's supposed to 100% be him. I had just organized it. So we ended up booking the Elks Lodge in Hopewell. We sold tickets to it. We did radio interviews. We got flyers put out. We did everything except for write a joke or hit an open mic. We had no idea what we were doing, but we knew what we wanted to do. And so we packed it out. It was the jankiest thing ever. It was terrible. people showed up. We ended up not getting a liquor license. So people showed up with alcohol. They thought it was BYOB. They couldn't bring it in. We're like, look, just go to the store and get some water bottles and pour it in the water bottle. It was like, oh my God, it was so ghetto. But we did it for about a year. So we sold enough tickets where it's like, all right, so we were funny, but it wasn't nothing like you would think. And so we ended up booking another venue, and we did it again a couple months later in Petersburg. And then we did it maybe about 5 or 6 times. And then we culminated to a show we did in Hampton, Virginia.
Wow.
But afterwards, Daryl was in a terrible car accident, almost lost his life. He couldn't walk, talk for a long time. He still barely can walk and talks with a speech impediment. That was in 2018. So that kind of put a stop to everything. And so by 2018, I realized I'm going to have to be the comedian if I'm still doing this, because he's gone. I was just hosting it. I was setting it up, hosting it. And I didn't know what I was doing. So somebody told me, you got to go to open mics. And I'm from Petersburg, Virginia, where there is no comedy open mics. In Petersburg, a lot of times, if there's something you want to do, you got to be the one to start it. So, so that's my journey into kind of just producing comedy shows. But I eventually started going to Richmond, Virginia to do the open mics. Mm-hmm. And so once I learned that that's how you get better, almost like going to the gym to get strong. Right. And I learned that that's the formula, is to go to open mics. So that's when I started going between 5 to 10 open mics a week. I did that for like 2 years straight. Yeah. And so that's kind of what took me from somebody just hosting to somebody that can really be on a show. That's when I really started taking it serious.
That is a keynote you said in there, I think is good for new comics to hear right there, is how important the reps are. It's like working out, you get stronger, you get better. And for comics, especially starting out, we all need to work on our jokes and create new material. That's true. Even more so when you're beginning, just the reps in an open mic format or other formats, how crucial and important they are. That's a pretty good pace for a more rural market, 5 to 10 a week. Where did you go? Tell you what,
everywhere.
Richmond?
So back, yeah, I was in Richmond most of the time. Like, but it's so many. So you got people that might just know these mics, or they might just know these mics. But I'm the type that went to all the mics. For lack of better words, the black mics, the white mics, the traditional comedy mics, the unorthodox mics, the mics where they interrupt you while you're trying to perform, everything. And then, we've done shows in laundromats. Oh yeah, it was nobody there but like 3 Latinx ladies. I don't know if They understood me, but they were laughing, so I was good with it. But yeah, just everywhere possible, you can get some stage time, you do it.
Who put the show together in the laundromat? That's what I want to know.
Melissa Harris.
Okay. She just said we're going to do a show in a laundromat. No.
She said we're going to do a show in the laundromat, and we did it. It was very different.
I would imagine so. I'm known for doing shows in some of the strangest places, so I have no judgment, but I wanted to know who that person was. That's pretty fun. What would you say is the most unusual place you've ever performed so far?
So, for some reason, people keep booking me for clean comedy shows.
I don't know who I got a call.
I got a call one Saturday that said, it's the older lady's birthday. The comic dropped out. Just fill in. And I said, cool, private show. I'm thinking a house. They give me the address. I pull up. It's a church. It's a whole church. This is not PG-13. It's PG Jesus. And so I was like, PG. Man, I show up and they're like, how much time are you going to do? I said, I know I told y'all what I told y'all, but and I had to do it in the pulpit. So I was just like, oh, man. I said, I'm going to give y'all like 8 minutes. And then you can judge me all you want. No, but it was fun. It was fun. I made it. I did it. I gave them about 15, 20 minutes. But it was just a little weird at first because, like, I can do clean comedy. But sometimes the content, I don't know how people feel about it, especially in the church, like on the pulpit. It just, that was kind of the weirdest the place I've ever had to do comedy.
Yeah, because you're more, would you say you're a more R-rated comedian?
Oh, yeah. In general? I'm definitely, in general, I can't, but it's not like I'm a filthy comic. Mm-hmm. It's just that my perspective is so broad that I can go anywhere from heaven to hell. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes some language is kind of warranted to explain what you see when you're in hell. Yeah, but I'm not one of those cussing just like every other word. MF or like, you, that, yeah, I'm not I wouldn't call myself a vulgar comic at all.
No, no. And you have performed for us several times before in our Clean to Cleanish brand. I would put you in the cleanish category, but it is very well received, and people certainly love you. We're so excited to bring you up to Massanutten Resort and share your comedy with the good people here again in that new environment. You have quite an extensive family, I was reading. You have a big family, is that correct?
Yeah, grandma had 16 kids.
Your mama had 16 kids.
No, not my mom. My grandma. My grandmother.
Okay,
had 16.
Your grandmother kids. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. My mom had three. And all of them had a bunch, and a bunch of them had a bunch, and so we're definitely huge. I got hundreds upon hundreds of cousins. We do huge family reunion. We used to do it every other year until the pandemic, and then we really didn't do one. But we are now having one this summer, so I'm excited about that. The first one since before 2020.
Wow.
But yeah, it's huge. It takes 2 years to plan it. That's how big we are.
Where kind of places do you go to, and how many people show up?
So we have property in Virginia, and we just show up there. It used to be my grandmother's property, but this year got a cousin who had a huge house on some land, so we're going to go to his place.
Did you say 100 people show up? Roughly?
In a bad year, it was maybe about 100, but you'll see at least about 300 before the weekend is over. Yeah.
Do you know every single one of them?
One of them. Yes, I do. But I meet new ones. No, I meet new cousins all the time.
Yeah.
So every time it's always a new cousin. Like, hey, this is your cousin such and such. Like, oh, okay. All right, cool.
That is crazy. What is that environment? Are you wild? Are you guys wild and loud and crazy?
Here's one thing I said, man, one thing, like, we're wild, yes, and we are very direct and to the point, but we've always so full of love. So my grandma, she always, every day she tells us, like, she prayed for every single one of us every morning.
And
And she always leads with love and God first. And so even though as wild as we are, I've never seen my family kind of like fighting each other, like really trying to hurt each other or draw blood or anything. Like, they might talk trash behind your back. They might put your business out there, but they're still going to look out for you if you need it. Yeah. And lead with love. So that's, and it's crazy because I know people with five people in their whole family and none of them get along. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, if you lose your job, you homeless, right? You ain't got nobody to call. Like, y'all need to get a, like, it's rough out here. I can't imagine not having a support system at all. You right? know what I mean? And to have only five people in your whole family and y'all don't get along. I don't understand that. Like, you can drop me anywhere off. You drop me off anywhere in America. I can walk to my cousin's house. Like, that's how deep we are.
With so many cousins, I'm sure.
Good. I can me. Never fail. You know what I mean? I'm too big. We're too big to fail.
Got a cousin in every state, probably across mm-hmm. the U.S.
Yep.
How do you guys keep up with each other at the family reunion? Or is there a
we
Facebook
don't.
Group?
We okay. don't. We just remind each other at the family reunion. You're like, hey, oh, you big as hell, man. Like, that's right. Like, hey. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And you have a lot of emphasis yourself personally on community. I'm sure some of it comes naturally from that big family. And you pour into your community. And I think you were sharing with me before we recorded that you got this from your parents. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So my mother and my father or what they call African revolutionaries. They were about the liberation of Black people in America as far as financially being able to have ownership and being able to be educated on social engineering and even things like health, mm-hmm. best health practices, and then also having access to healthcare. A lot of people heard of like the Black Panthers. Mm-hmm. So that was that is an African Revolutionary Party. There were a few of them. One of them was called the All African Revolutionary Party. Similar is AARP, but not the not the one that I'm about to start getting letters from soon. But that was just one of many organizations that took that route as far as knowing that. Chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And so America, weakest links are the neighborhoods that have been disenfranchised and forgotten about. So these organizations, in an effort to strengthen up America, do things like the free lunch program, literacy programs, programs to help people coming home from jail to get their rights back. So these type of community programs are designed to create a stronger country. And so I always felt like that's one of the most patriotic things I can do is to continue to kind of be a hand for the community when they need to reach out. So I try to volunteer and do things. I try to use my platform to bring awareness to certain issues. And even so for the last 3 years, I've done something called Positive Vibes Only, which is a festival, a free festival for the community. They come out as comedy, it's vendors, stuff for the kids, and then it's comedians and improv groups. But the whole time, I got a bunch of mental health awareness info we're passing out.
Oh,
and
wow.
Crisis management information we pass out. And then people coming in and talk, just kind of sprinkling in, yeah, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That health awareness, but under the guise of a free festival. So that's something I'm very proud of that I've been doing. For the last few years, we'll be doing it again. Okay. Brambley Park, Virginia, August 7th, I believe. Positive Vibes Only Festival.
What part of Virginia? What was the city?
Richmond, Virginia, I believe on the north side.
Okay.
It's called
right.
Brambley Park. If you haven't been to Richmond in a while, don't worry. It's gentrified now. It's safe. it used to be an area you go to when you're ready to lose your religion, but it's very nice now.
Okay.
It's a whole brewery. It's all a right. microbrewery. It's with a huge outdoor lawn and a stage. They do a lot of outdoor music stuff there. So it's called Brambley Park. It's a pretty nice place.
Okay, we'll have to get that information from you so we can put that in the show notes as well. So, laughers, you can see Moo again later in August and experience this festival. Does it run a whole day, half a day?
the whole day. Okay. We usually run it about between 1 to 4. We're going to start it, and then it goes till sundown.
Right. So you have a variety of acts that fill up that time space in within the festival.
Yeah. So last year we did stand up comedy, an improv group, and poets. We did some poets along with the speakers. Mm-hmm. But this year I have a meeting coming up with a liaison with the city of Richmond. If I have my way, then it'll be including a citywide youth poetry contest.
Oh, wow.
So then that way kind of get some more community engagement and kind of maybe help foster some positive energy that way as well. So that's still in the works, though. So don't tell nobody other than everyone who listens to the podcast.
That is amazing. Do you have people help you with a festival? Are you the main organizer? How does that
So I'm the main organizer because I haven't had a lot of funding. I've been doing most of it myself. But the volunteers comes as far as in the way of the acts, the comedians. They volunteer their time. The poets volunteer their time. Bridge Nine Theater, who did the improv, shout out to Rachel Garman. They are awesome. They volunteer their time. And so definitely, I don't mind giving them a shout out, Bridge Nine Theater. They also do free community engagement classes. If you ever wanted to get into improv, you can follow Bridge Nine Theater. And they do stuff for youth. And they also do, what's it called? Don, help me out. We don't have this in the Black community. What's it? But it's something with like not too much stimulation in case your kid kind of, you know what I mean?
Autistic.
Yeah, but it's something that they call it when the entertainment doesn't have a lot of stimulus in it.
There is like a word for that. Oh gosh.
I not, forgot what it is. Like I said, my friend, we still just getting new to how to accommodate mental health. So I forgot what it's called, but yeah, they do the non-stimulating classes though. So for if you have a child that can't handle all the lights and the sound and the fast-paced moving, but still wants to do something fun, holler at them. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
All right, if I talk more, then they're gonna have to pay me. So that's enough talk.
For real, right? How do you feel the hip-hop background and your heart for the community influences your comedy style?
Okay, so the hip-hop background influences my comedy as far as the confidence, getting on stage, commanding that energy. Mm-hmm. So from years of just being on stage and kind of rocking on stage, just knowing that that I belong on there. And so that helps me a lot. But it is much different though, because with hip hop, you got your song, no matter who's in the audience, no matter how they feel, that song is going to hit the way that song is going to hit, period. Mm-hmm. With comedy, you put it out there and then depending on who's in there and depending on how they feel, depends on how it hits.
And so
that was a major adjustment there. Like, just knowing I can't just write it just because I think it's number one. It's number one. Like, I got to present it to them and they got to let me know if that's a number one joke. You know what I mean? Like, I can write a bar and I know it's a bar and I'm going to give it to you, but I can write a joke. I got to give it to you and I got to wait for you to give me energy back to really know that I killed it. So that was definitely a huge difference there. But as far as my love for the community, I think me getting on stage doesn't really have much to do with my love for the community. Mm-hmm. That more has to do with just my love for performing. If I did have to make a connection with the two, I would say being able to tell stories is a way to help preserve history.
That's true.
And so that's a contribution that I don't take lightly. So I was fortunate enough to star in a play that just wrapped last weekend called Sunset Baby. Mm-hmm. And it was at the Virginia Rep Theater, Broad Street in Richmond. And it was a type of story that's not usually told on those type of stages. Virginia Rep Theater is very classical theater. You think of the Gilbert and Sullivan's and the Hamilton and stuff like that. But Sunset Baby is, for lack of better words, a hood story.
A hood story.
So they put that hood story. Yeah, it's hood a hood story.
Okay.
Yeah, about a couple that sells drugs and robs people, and have been disenfranchised, but they're also very intelligent and they want to move out of the country. And so for me to be able to star in that and tell that story, that's kind of impact. That's something that I could say my love for the community helps me. I'm getting away from your question. I'm trying to answer this the way that fits the question, but you said, how does my love for the community impact my art? And so being able to take roles like that is because of my love for being able to tell real stories from where I came from. So it does affect it. And this has become a very long-winded answer.
And I'm liking it very much.
Let me stop and take a breath. But so I will say that, It does affect kind of the type of gigs I accept as far as the stories that I want to see put out there. It definitely affects that a lot.
Did I read with regards to this play correctly that you performed with your father? Or is that another play? Oh, so it is correct.
Yes, it is this one. This was the fourth professional production we've been a part of together. It's awesome.
Wow.
And this is a three-cast play. And so he played the father of the girl. I played the boyfriend of the girl, who's the main character. And it's just an awesome experience. We were also in, we started in a Soldier's Play at Swift Creek Mill Theater a couple years ago. We starred in A Midsummer Night Slam, which is a readapted story of Midsummer Night's Dream, which is at Dogwood Dell Theater in Richmond last summer. And then we did Simply Heavenly, which is Langston Hughes wrote that. We did that at Sycamore Rouge 2 years ago. That was the first one we got to do. We have been nominated for the Best Ensemble when we did Soldier's Play. So that was a pretty great experience. To be able to experience some of these things that I'm doing in the first place is just awesome. But to be able to do that with my father is just unbelievable. It's how I know that God has his hand on my life, because things like this just don't happen. So it's definitely an awesome experience.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing to me. How did this happen? Did your father look at you and say, hey, let's do this play together? Or you looked at him and said, hey, let's do this play together? How did we end up, you and your father, doing so many plays together?
The first one was me looking for meaning of life, because I was at a stage of life where I was going to work, and I was single. It was before I was in a relationship or anything, no kids, but I was going to work, coming home. I had a nice house, a nice car, but I wasn't doing anything. I was just working, paying my bills. I was drinking every day. And that was it. And I was like, what am I supposed to be doing with my life? Like, this doesn't feel fulfilling at all. So that's what my father suggested. Hey, why don't you go down to the theater and audition to be in a play or something? So I went and auditioned to be in a play, and he just happened to audition too. And we both got cast to be in it. So that was the first time. Then the second time, we both just happened to audition for a play. We both just happened to get it. The third time, my wife was part of casting the one at the Dogwood Dell. And so so I got some nepotism involved with that one. She's like, hey, we need someone to play this funny character. So they called me for that. But then they needed someone to play a poet. And my father's a poet. So
okay.
So they said, did he want to do that? And then this one, the last one, Sunset Baby, it was actually someone else set to play the father, but something happened and the actor had to drop out. And so I said, well, I know somebody who can play it. And I gave them my father's name, but I gave them two other actors' names too, so they wouldn't think that I was just trying to be, you know, biased. But so I don't know. They said, all right, we'll see. And they called and did some reads. And then they said, oh, we're bringing him in. I said, cool.
That's amazing. Were your dad and you always close from when you were young all the way through?
Yeah. So we've had our moments growing up. So yeah,
it happens.
We were affected by things in the community. And let's just say my mother and my father separated when I was about two. And then my father was up in these streets for a minute. So so we separated. And I lived with my grandfather, my grandmother, for a few years until he got himself together. And he eventually did. So we reconnected when I was about 13, when I was about a teenager. We reconnected and just been growing ever since. Yeah. So I've been, and it's been awesome to watch his progress, because I used to blame him for my failures. Like, you ain't do life right. I ain't got to do life right type of energy. And then just to see him getting it right now and doing the things he's doing is the reason why I know I can do what I'm supposed to do and get it right. So we've had a rocky relationship, but we're closer than a father and son could ever be right now. So it's awesome. And I wouldn't change none of it for the world.
That's amazing.
That's a lie. I'll probably change a few things, but but it sounds good.
That's, you know what? We grow through the hardships, and now you begin to experience a restorative relationship, a healing relationship, and you get to play with them on stage and tell stories, which is pretty incredible. Is he comedic also? Do you get it natural from him or your mother? He's humorous.
I would call him humorous. Okay. Yeah, he has an awesome sense of, like, growing up, we would just watch, like, he was the one I would watch Comedy Central with. He's the one that I would watch Seinfeld with. He's the one I watched Martin with. He's the one that kind of, we laughed. He's the one that got the joke that I got. And so we would laugh so hard at things. And other people would just be like, we would just, like, look at each other. It's like, he's very, very humorous. He's not like a comedian, so he's not the one that has to tell the joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he gets the joke. He gets the humor every time.
That's good. Does your mom have a sense of humor too?
My mother's weird.
Mine is too. I love her, but yeah.
She's the reason why I understand why they call it a sense of humor. She has a sense of humor. She can sense it. But a lot of stuff go over her head. My mother's very, very book smart. She has her PhD.
Yeah,
she's read all the books.
And
so, you know, you'll say a joke and then she'll start explaining and breaking stuff down. It's like, you know, I was just joking. We're good.
Do you have a lot of family that come to your comedy shows? Or,
man, if it wasn't for my family, man, I wouldn't be who I am. But yeah, shout out to Bessane and all her kids, Anna and Lorraine and John and Sabrina and Eunice and Angie and Amanda and all of them. Those are all brothers and sisters. They under one of the clans. We call it. We got like 13 clans in the family. My grandma's kids. But they always have been the ones to support. In fact, they were the first ones to actually pay me. They paid me $350 to come do a comedy show at one of their 40th birthday parties. Yeah, you couldn't tell me nothing. They paid me $350. Like, that was, I already quit my job.
Vegas, baby.
You know what I mean? Man, if I could just do this. No, but it did kind of make me see, okay, it's possible to get paid off, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, they looked out for me, because I was not worth that whole $350. I was not. I was still just very new in the game. But it gave me something to shoot for.
Yeah.
And it gave me, like, you know what I mean? I saw what I could see what could happen. If it wasn't for my family supporting me, then I wouldn't have that, be able to create that vision.
Yeah, you have very supportive family. We went and watched you film your special. This, I think, was a year or so ago now. Anyways, yeah, were there
more
was,
than that?
Yeah, okay. Were there, was that a lot of family in that room? I think so.
It was definitely all the Bessane kids that I just named out. They were all there.
Yeah.
They're always at the big shows. So I would say it was probably about 30% family. So I'm evenly supported from family, colleagues and comedy, and then my coworkers. Like, my supervisor was there. If you see the lady in the dress that's laughing, the brown skin lady is laughing a lot, that's my supervisor. I do karaoke every Sunday, and the last time I did it, it was a whole table full of people from my job there.
Amazing. Yeah. And you have a time travel trivia night coming up. Talk about that a little bit.
So every second Thursday, my wife and I host trivia. So we're going to be switching up the themes each month, but this next one is time travel trivia. It's going to be pop culture, sports, entertainment, and news and celebrities from 1970s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and 2010. Just some fun we do. No real prizes. We give out like maybe a couple gift cards and some merch. But it's at Soul Rebel in Old Town Petersburg. Anyone who's in the area, if you happen to be in Petersburg area on second Thursday, is definitely a good time. My wife and I, we have this energy on stage that I can't explain. It's funny and it's cringy and it's worth it. We're like a train that's always looking like it's about to derail, but it's perfect because it always comes right back around and we stay on track. But it's scary, but it's fun.
I feel you on that. The other funny woman, my husband, we do co-sets now. You haven't seen that yet, but we go up on stage together a lot now. And it sounds very similar. You know, we have different methods of preparing. So there's some stress beforehand because we're different like that. And then we go up there and then there's this chemistry that's just so comfortable and fun. It's so hard to describe it, but it's great. Yeah.
My favorite part is when you see the couple on stage and the veil between real life and entertainment gets real thin and you'd be like, oh no, nah, this is about to go sideways. He really meant that.
I know. It's rip each other too, for sure.
Yeah.
It's
like just in that relationship.
It's a total fun time. You also have open mics at Soul Rebel too. So you doing open mics on the nights that you're not doing trivia, or what does that look like? The open mic.
That's on every fourth Saturday. We do an open mic. It's the most overglorified open mic in Virginia. I have a DJ. I hype it up. I promise the audience all type of goodness and wonderfulness, but it's an open mic, so you get what you get. I do this for the comedians, so the comedians can have a spot that feels like a real show where they can work on material. And so I do everything I can to get a crowd in there because, you know, nobody just wakes up like, you know what, let's go to a comedy open mic. Nobody just does that. So you kind of got to really create a vibe and be consistent, to pack a room out. That's just a comedy open mic. So that's what I do there. It's every fourth Saturday. It starts at 8 o'clock, sign ups at 7. Again, that's the Soul Rebel, Old Town Petersburg. Is a gentrified area again, so you're less likely to get ran up on. You know, it's a lot. I don't know what you heard about Petersburg, but there's a lot of rumors going on that Petersburg might not be safe sometimes.
I'm glad we're clearing the air then, so the comics can go there. Yeah, I'll have to talk to you about after the recording before you hop off, because we have a resource on our website for open mics so that local comics can check that out. And I don't think we have yours on there, so we need to add it. So I will get that information from you. I want to talk to you about how real you are with people and how fun you are on stage. I've seen it myself. I'm so excited to bring it to Massanutten Resorts Comedy Club. You just have this authenticity about you and the dynamics that you have just within yourself and the crowd. I would like for you to talk to me about your approach in your comedy style with this authenticity. Where does this come from? Maybe you love the storytelling. Where does it all come from?
Honestly, it's just my personality. It's not even an approach. That's just who I am. I'm real to a fault. This is why I will never get promoted at my job. Like, they don't trust that I'm going to always be in alignment because I'm going to say what I see. You know what I mean? And it works for me, though, as a comedian. Because even at my job, I went in and there was one supervisor there. I said, oh, I thought it was the other supervisor. And they said, oh, you don't want me here? I said, oh, no, don't take it like that. I don't like either one of y'all. And I was being 100% honest, but they laughed. Like, ah, you're so crazy. But So I thought, if you're honest, that's what I've learned. If you're honest, but if you're honest as soon as it comes to your brain, people will accept it. The longer you wait before you kind of are honest, the more it comes across as either skeptical or fake. So I think that is kind of like my superpower, is I'm able to say something that's real without being offensive. Mm-hmm. Some people don't know that when you're trying to not be offensive, you're being offensive. Like, I had a friend, he was like, "Hey, look, not to sound racist or nothing." I'm like, "Bro, just stay what's on your mind." Like, now, when you say not to sound racist, like, you already letting me know that you feel racist on the inside. Now, what you want to say? He's like, "There's a lot of black people in Norfolk." Like, what do you mean? Like, that's not racist. That's statistics. Like, that's weird. Like, so. You know what I mean? But if he would have just been like, "There's a lot of black people in Norfolk," I'd have laughed. You know what I mean? Because right. It created that buffer. So that, I think that's kind of why it works for me. I'll say it as soon as I think it. And so it comes across as either genuine, and I either sound like an expert, or either I sound like a childish person who doesn't know what to say out of his mouth. But either way, it comes across as kind of cute, or not, I don't want to say cute, but it comes across as funny because it sounds authentically idiotic, not malice or disrespectful. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. You come off as a very relatable, joyful, jovial person who connects with people. And I think that's part of the reason why you're called Cuzzo, is because you have that kind of "we are family" vibe. That's kind of my vibe too, in my own style. But is that where the Cuzzo nickname comes from? Is because of that?
Yeah, Cuzzo is slang for cousin.
Yeah.
And so that's how I feel like we should all treat each other like cousins, because I feel like this would be a perfect world if we all could do that. And that way, no matter who you pray to, who you vote for, what school you go to, if you treat every person like that's your family, this would be a perfect world, because even when we disagree, we'll do it with love and respect.
I agree with that 100%. I think we've gotten too far away from that right now. It is way okay not to agree with another person and still love them. That both things can be true at the same time. And then when you seek to understand, you can be understood, and maybe you will change your mind when you get more information or more insight or a different perspective. But it's very hard to even entertain that if you're not speaking to each other.
People are so angry. Yeah. Why are they so angry?
I don't know.
Like, you can't even say, I like sugar in my oatmeal. You piece of shit. What's wrong with you? You're like, "It's my oatmeal. You ain't even got to eat it."
I'm not sure. I just keep praying. For just more love and more understanding, more compassion, more empathy. And
more comedy shows.
More comedy shows, which is what we do. I'm so excited about that. I wanted to ask you, speaking of comedy, you have a bit of an online presence, which is pretty fun. And how do you go about creating content for your platforms? I see you make little videos, you're talking to people, you're telling them what's going on. Are you just doing that off the fly? Are you planning them and scheduling them out? What's your process with the social media engagement?
Yeah. So I'm still kind of new to it. I hate having to do it because I'm just old school. I want to write my jokes and you come see me at the club. But I fought against it long enough where I realized you gotta, either you're moving forward or you're falling back. So for the most part, it's usually on the fly. I got a show coming up. Let me make a video. I have started learning about batch content creating. And, so I know the more I'm trying to accomplish, the more I'm gonna have to start creating more and more videos. So I just hooked up with a couple production companies, and we're gonna start doing sketches. Something I haven't gotten into that I'm gonna start getting into. just because that's the wave. But as of right now, it's strictly, okay, I got a show coming up. Let me do a video, or all right, let me just post something today so that I keep my engagement up, my followers up, because if not, the algorithm will drop you like a bad habit. But I'm still learning the best way to kind of stay relevant in the algorithm without feeling like I'm becoming a gimmick. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We'll see. I'm still evolving on that part.
We are too. Our goal is to, the Funny Womax, put out more comedy clips, either our solo clips or duo clips. So we started cutting more of those so we can have like a batch of them before we start rolling them out to what you're talking about, working in that direction. And that's what I hear from the other comedians out there, is that's what they do. They do batch content and then they schedule it out, and it seems to be less stressful that way, but also still seems to be a lot at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a lot for all of us to keep up with. It's different challenges though. I mean, if before all of this, there still are road comics, but road comics meant something different in the 80s and 90s and 2000s and even the 2010s than it does now. Would you agree?
Oh yeah. I can imagine, because in the 80s and 90s and the 2000s, you can travel around the country with one set, and you might do that set for a year or two. And now, by your third city, they've heard your set already. And they're like, oh man, you're doing the same jokes. And so it forces comedians to write more and have way more material. But I honestly feel like it takes away from the perfection of the actual joke. So for that comic who's been working on that set for 2 years, it's evolved to the point where it'll break your rib. It's so funny. But where they don't have a chance to kind of do the joke 100 million times, they don't get it to the point where it's that funny. They just get it to the point where it makes you laugh, but now they're on to something different. So I think, I think the internet kind of hurt the game as far as the quality of comedy, but it is making it easier to navigate comedy though.
Yeah. What do you think about the approach of just putting crowd work clips out there, or primarily putting crowd work clips out there versus actual clips?
It's a good strategy in my opinion, because you don't have to give them your A material. So if you can have everything that you have online is crowd work, then you can go back to just doing that one set for a long period of time, or at least for your whole tour. And the stuff online, I mean, as long as they don't leak your set out there, which it is what it is. But then that way you have, because people kind of, they want to know what they're getting into. They want to hear your comedy. So if you don't have a lot of material, you can definitely use crowd work material, if it's funny, to promote your shows. And then you give them the stuff you wrote during the show. But the only reason I don't rely on crowd work is because it's not always there. It's hit or miss. Like, everybody's not going to have that magic that a Winston Hodges or Matt Rife will have. Yeah. Like, that's what they do. But
yeah,
it's hit or miss. You know what I mean? Like, I did a show with Matt Rife at Sandman Comedy Club a couple years ago. Yeah. And I told him then, I said, listen, until you start taking your shirt off and doing crowd work, you're never going to make it.
You're hilarious. And he said, oh yeah, that's probably what I should do.
Well, he told me he was insecure because he had to get some nipple reduction surgery. His nipples were too big, and he was very insecure about having big old nipples. And so it took him a while for him to kind of get out of that phase. And finally took his shirt off. He blew up.
Finally, he listened to you.
Yeah.
But did you really work with him at Sandman?
Yep. It was the very first, I want to say, very first weekend Sandman Comedy Club opened. I hosted it. Matt Rife was the feature and Finesse Mitchell was the headliner.
He was the feature. And that was a couple of years ago?
Yeah, but you could tell he was working on his, like, he was a pretty good feature. I didn't think he would get to where he got that quickly.
Yeah.
But he took his shirt off and it happened.
See, he listened to you.
Yeah.
That is crazy because I think that's right around the time that he did blow up as around then. Because I want to say it was a couple of years ago when he blew up.
Yep.
That is pretty crazy. And he was the feature. Comedy is a wild ride, isn't it? Don't you think? I feel it. Chris and I talk about, the other funny woman and I talk about this a lot. It really will stretch you like no other craft I've ever experienced. Do you agree with that statement? Or
Oh yeah, because it's so I spent the weekend hosting for Tracy Morgan last December.
Oh, and that's it was surreal. A blessing. I bet.
Yeah. And then had to go and be a telemarketer Monday morning. And so
that's like one world opposite from the other world. Oh
man. Yeah, so it definitely stretches you and so it's like I'm walking in the office like y'all don't even know. I'm not supposed to be in here right now. But at the same time, it's weird because like you say, it stretches you. And
it really does.
So people looking at me like, oh my God, you're opening up for one of the top comedians in the world. You made it. And they don't even know a hosting gig is $50. So it's right. I'm like, you made it. I'm like, no, I didn't. I need gas money to get home. I spent $50 on food. so it's like, it definitely stretches you. You got to be able to be humble enough to accept a $50 role, and you got to be able to be kind of secure enough to let people know, like, no, I'm not there. It just looks like I'm there. I got work to do. Mm-hmm. But you also got to be hungry enough to do the work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But you also got to be satisfied enough to know that it may never get to what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay too, because I don't feel like anyone should be doing stand-up comedy, honestly, just because they want to be rich. Like if you're doing comedy for the money, you're going to quit. It's not for you. I feel like doing comedy is definitely should be a calling. Almost like a preacher or a politician, because I could have been a preacher or a politician, but I hate lying to people. I wanted to do something to tell the truth, so I became a comedian.
That's a good way to say it, though. Yeah, I agree with all of that. I remember talking to Winston Hodges, and Laffers, if you're not familiar with him, we have had him on several of our shows, too. He's a headliner also. He's known for his crowd work, which is pretty amazing. If you've ever been to one of our shows where you had him on, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And he was saying, I just cannot not do it, which is not a problem at all. After a great show and all of the wonderful shows I've been a part of, but it can be hard when comedy does get hard because I cannot not do this. So I agree with that. And that's a bit of the calling nature that you're talking about. You cannot not do it.
Yeah. I have a book on Amazon called My Tight 10. Which is pretty much just a notepad for comedians and a way to keep track of your jokes, your thoughts, and your progress. And in the beginning, it has a section where you write down your why. What is your why? Why are you really doing this? Because you're going to need that when you got to drive 5 hours to do 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're going to need that when you get this private hood show that was supposed to start at 7 and it's 11 o'clock at night. And you want to go home, but these people spend real money and they got cash. Like you're going to need that. Why? You know what I mean? When this thing that you wrote out, that's your baby that you know is going to kill, is stupid and it's never going to work. And you look stupid as hell for even saying it. Like you're going to need that. Why? So that's definitely, again, like you said, you got to have the wherewithal to do it. Because if not, you're going to give up, especially if you're doing it for the money. Mm-hmm. Like, I've had a couple people doing it for like, man, there ain't no money in this. Like, yeah, I know.
It's a bit of feast of famine. You can make really great money as you keep progressing. And certainly there's clean comedy work and corporate work. That's additional ways that people can make money as they're moving up. But definitely at first, it's more about getting stage time, stage time, stage time, stage time, whatever that looks like. And that's even more important than, I mean, you got to grow to a point where people want to pay you, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's what that's what I know. If I can't guarantee a club, if you book me, at least 60 people are going to be in there, then I shouldn't be trying to tell them what they need to pay me. But at the same time, you got to know your value. So, and that's the conundrum with it. It's because they say never turn down stage time, but I've also learned always know your value and never kind of dumb down your own value. So there's a fine line you got to walk there. And I learned this because I learned a lot from Winston Hodges, honestly. But one thing I learned from him is, do what you control. He's like, I want to get paid off doing comedy. I can't control the me getting paid part, but I can control the me getting on stage. And if I just do whatever I can do to be on a stage every night, whether it's open mic stage, no matter what kind of stage, just every night I'm on a stage, eventually the universe will make it make sense to pay me to do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I feel like it's whatever it is you want to do, even if it's not comedy. I don't know what your laughers are into, but whatever it is you're doing in life, just do it. Just keep doing it. Don't even worry about doing it right. Do it and then do it right. Do it a few times before you get it right. But at least that way, once you do it right, you got that experience. And that first time you did it, it's not the thing that's going to get presented. And you don't have to look like, you don't know what you're doing because you got the experience of doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it right. And then when it comes down to anyone who's worked in corporate knows, you do the job you want before they hire you for it. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're doing it, you're telling God, this is what I want. And then God will be like, all right. It's on God to be like, all right, or either give you something else to do. You know what I mean? So
that's a good word. It's laughers in the intro. We said Moo uplifts you when he gets opportunity to do so. And you just did that. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I agree.
Yeah, I'm going to start my own. I'm going to start my own church one day.
You are?
It's going to be called the Universal Church of God's Awesome Energy.
Oh, I love that.
This is a little non-traditional, a little non-traditional. I ain't gonna get into it right now, but yeah, look out for it. My church coming soon.
Okay, we'll look out for that church. I love that. In the meantime, you're coming to Massanutten and you're bringing people. I understand. How many people are we bringing?
So I reserved about 10 rooms. Half of those were doubles, so I believe there are about 2, maybe 3 rooms left last time I checked. So somewhere between 7 to 15 people, depending on if they all sharing rooms. I was going to try to do a bus trip, but it wasn't enough people to actually do a bus. So it was just carpooling. I just put it out there on Facebook. Like, anybody want to go to Massanutten? And a few people say, yeah. I was like, oh, let me see if I can get some discount rooms. And so, the people at Massanutten were definitely gracious enough to work with me, and I'm grateful that they were able to do that. So laughers, if y'all want a discount room, I got like 2 or 3 left. We got them for the low. Hit me up. May 24th if you want to stay overnight. I don't know. I just put stuff out there sometimes and people be supporting. I'm like, wow, okay, let's do it then. Like, I just be putting it out there just to put it out there, and whatever happens, happens.
I think that's great. Yeah, they have a group salesperson there and a team to work with laughers or anyone who wants to come to Massanutten Resort. I think that's phenomenal. And I'm so glad that you took advantage of that. I'm very excited about that. And then you're going to come entertain us. I would love for you to just kind of describe to a laugher that may have never experienced Mukazo comedy before, and they decide to buy a ticket and come to the show at the Comedy Club on May 24th or any show where you are performing, what can they expect?
To laugh, first and foremost.
Very important.
Yes. Yes, you will laugh. What you will be laughing at may vary. It could be anything from fart jokes to my family. I even get philosophical from time to time. I talk a lot about my wife just because marriage is hilarious.
It is.
I've been married for 3 years and have not cheated on her yet. So that's an awesome thing. Let's talk about, got a kid. He's 4 and I'm 44. I got a kid. I'm going to say it again. He's 4. I'm 44. I don't know if they understand what that means. When he's 10, I'll be 50. I'm already tired. This is exhausting. I don't know what I was thinking. So I talk about that. And then I talk about, some current events, some things I see. I usually, you know, stay away from politics just because mm-hmm. everything is so polarizing. I do bring it up just to kind of gauge where my audience is so I can know how intelligent my jokes need to be. No, but here's the thing. I can make jokes like that and be ambiguous and everybody thinks I'm talking about the other side. It's like I'm talking about all y'all idiots. No, but and so that's why I like to poke fun. I'll hold the mirror up to society, but it's a funhouse mirror, so it's showing you how dumb we look when we do certain things. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what I like to do, kind of show the fallacy of like was that show Archie Bunker? And so he was like a funhouse mirror to kind of like America's like, you know, this is how crazy you look when you say certain things. You know what I mean? So that's what I do. You know what I mean? Like this is how crazy we are as a society when we go out of our way to say, I can't say they, them. I got an uncle. I can't say they, them. She looked like a girl. I'm going to say she. I can't say they, them. And I'm like, let me hold this front of house mirror. And I said, why don't you talk about lunch you had with your coworker yesterday? He's like, oh, them? You don't know them. They just moved in. They, them. You know why he couldn't say they, them? Because she was light-skinned with a fat booty, and he don't want to talk about her around my aunt. So he say they, them all the time when you talk about her. So that's what I do, kind of show the fallacy of our thinking sometimes. It's like, you know, if we put in a little bit of effort, we can be accommodating for all.
All right. I love that. Yeah. I think people are going to have a good time out there. Oh, yeah. I think regardless of where right, left, or center, you were saying that earlier, you know, we can all come together. We share in our humanity. I say that a lot. We share in our humanity. We're all humans at the end of the day. We're all flawed. You know, haven't every single minute of every single day of our life made the best decision there is to make out there, so we can give each other grace and love and respect and come together closer instead of further apart. And we're better when we work together and live together and play together than when we're not. Because we can learn from each other.
Better together.
Yep. We are better together for sure. Well, this has been great. I would like to ask my final question, which is, as we wrap up here, how best can the laughers follow you on social media or otherwise to get more information and connect with you?
Yep. So Mu804 is MU804. That's on Facebook and Instagram. I have a TikTok called Freaky Fat Funny.
Do you really? I thought I saw that. Yes. I was like, I don't have a TikTok. I'm not going to get into this right now, but I'm glad you brought it up because I did want to ask, is that him? Is that Mu?
That's me. I haven't posted anything on there in a while, but I am going to start engaging more on TikTok.
Okay.
On the Freaky Fat Funny. And I have a YouTube page, but I don't have anything on it. I do have a lot of content on 360 Iris Media.
Okay.
Which is a YouTube page owned by my friend Benjamin Oliver. And we have my special that we recorded, Psychnol, is on there.
Okay.
And then clips of some things we call Following Mu is a clip of me exploring the Fremont experience in Las Vegas. It's a clip of me at a rap battle at the Hof Garden in RVA. And it's a clip of me interviewing Winston Hodges, of all people.
Oh, wonderful.
So we're
big fans
cool.
of Winston. Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Definitely check that out. But that's on 360 Iris TV, actually. 360 Iris TV is what they call it.
Okay.
Yep, and then MU804 on everything else. definitely you can follow me. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Pornhub, Christian Mingle, just all over the place. You know what? I'm sorry. I should not have said that. I am not on Christian Mingle. That was a lie. But
I think your wife, Paula, might not like Pornhub, but I don't know.
She's on there with me. We have a move. We have a patented move. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think we should explain it on here because I'm clean-ish. You know what I mean? Like, for those who don't know what that means, like, I'm not going to be cussing and shit. Like, we're good. I'm family-friendly. How about that? That's why I tell people when they come to my mind, like, it ain't the cleanest, but it's family friendly. Like, you can bring your kid. If you let your kids watch TV after 9 o'clock, you can let them see me do comedy. You're good.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. But don't let them watch Pornhub because that's a bit much.
Yes, I would agree. You know,
yeah, but let them grow up and watch it on their own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not as kids. No. We all right. Well, we said that.
I didn't get you lost for words in that. My bad.
Like, where do we go with this? We close. That's what we do. Thank you.
Yeah. We stop.
We're back. Yeah. Thank you for joining us today, Moo. This has been super fun talking with you a bit about your journey and your story, your family, and all things Moo Cuzzo comedy. Thanks again for coming on the show. It's been a pure pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. Please have me on again so I can tell you about opening night at the play when I went on and my shoes was on the wrong feet and I didn't have my belt on. And so my pants was falling off and I had to, instead of go in front of the stage, I had to stand in the back of the couch and lean on it to hold my pants up and deliver my lines. And they still said I killed it. So we're going to talk about that next time. And we're going to talk about the wild advice Tracy Morgan gave me. So I do want to talk about that next time as well. So you got to make sure you bring me back.
Okay, now we're given a cliffhanger. We'll do that for sure. I think that's so exciting because we do want to have you back another time and catch up with you. So that'll be amazing. And laughers, thank you for tuning in and spending time with us today. We so appreciate you. If you like this podcast, please give it a like, subscribe, tell a friend. And we just want to say again, a big thank you for following us. Don't forget, you can get that free audiobook from Audible when you click the link in the show notes. And then if you sign up, we'll actually get a little kickback that helps us again grow this amazing podcast and deliver more awesome content to you so you can get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience that does not involve hiking. And then lastly and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by the Funny Womax and Friends. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to a FWAF show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to thefunnywomax.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.